it, child, that your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place?
Welcome to episode number 132 of the Inside Running Podcast. Thank you for joining us for another week. Big show coming at you. That many race results to get through. We'll be here all night. Welcome to my co-host, Bradley Croker, up at Canberra. How are you going?
I'm good, Brady. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm going very well. Thanks, Bradley. What's been happening?
Not a great deal. I'm still not teaching. So, just plenty of running. And, Mother's Day yesterday, so spoiled Viv.
You've been busy, Brad. I haven't heard anything from you in the last 3 days. You're just not writing back to any of your messages.
No, I wouldn't say I've been overly busy.
Have you ever been busy in your whole life?
Not really. I'm all about work-life balance.
Just leaving me on scene. Hey, Moose, just never replies. Just trying to get some answers out of him, but no, nothing.
You can't imagine what he's doing, though, either.
It makes you feel worse about it, doesn't it?
I'm just being a dad.
Being a dad. Dad life. Welcome, Julian Spence, down in Ballarat. How you going?
Yeah, going well, thanks, mate.
That's good. What's been happening in your life?
What happened this week? Very little different, just running, doing my thing, working.
All over social media this week.
Really?
New podcast.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, we did record a new podcast. So the Shoe Dog, or the running, what did we end up calling it? Running Shoe Geeks? I can't remember what
it's your show.
It.
Yeah, Shoe Geeks.
Yeah. But it's a good one. I think people will, well, there'll be some people who love it and there'll be others who find it boring. But if you're into the world that I'm in, then you'll really enjoy it. So me, Michael Nischke and Tom DeCanto, they're both sports podiatrists with a real interest in shoes. And we chat about shoes, technology. We've got some guests lined up. We're going to do some segments where we talk about the shoes we're wearing during the week and certain injuries and what sort of shoes can have an impact on those injuries, that kind of thing. So it's going to be fun.
Good to see him doing some work for the podcast, Brad.
Yeah, yep. And then what, you're all over another panel today, Moose.
Oh, yeah. So I still don't know what that was called, but it was called a symposium. Have you heard of the symposium? Is it called a symposium?
Asking the wrong guy here.
Yeah.
Is this a thing? Because I had no idea what it was, but then apparently let me just Google it. Symposium.physio. So it was a physio symposium. Basically, Ali and I got on there and we got asked questions by Nitter and Luke Nelson, who is, I think he might be one of the organizers of this. We just chatted about our coaching philosophy and our progression as, well, mainly Ali's progression as a runner and a physio, and how that's affected training. I thought it went quite well, actually. So you got 24 hours to see it, It's a Zoom one, so it's a bit different. Had to put on a nice shirt.
That's only going to impact the Patreon supporters, because by the time this goes general public, it's gone. That's a long after 24
hours. You got to pay for it after that.
You're doing a podcast on Thursday as well. I got a message today asking if I wanted to be involved in a podcast, and they told me Moose was lined up for this Thursday.
Flavor of the month.
Oh, Jesus. I got to get this kneeling chair of mine's getting a workout at the desk.
What about running wise? You been doing any?
Yeah, got it done this week. So on the program, model athlete, I saw Ali say somewhere. So that's good. I did a, do you want me to tell you what I did?
That's usually what we do on this show, so that'd be fantastic.
Just let me pull up my Strava. I know, I Googled symposium instead of pulling my Strava up.
What did it mean?
Oh, no, it just...
Fancy word for discussion?
Yeah. I had a my history was there, so I just clicked it and it was online. It was just took me to that. So I don't have a definition of it yet. Oh, yeah, in the morning, ran around the golf course. This is a bit of a tune on repeat, isn't it, the golf course? But it's getting a bit soft with all this rain, a bit sloppy underfoot. Then had a great run in the Arvo. Got out at 4:25, put on, I think I put on some faster shoes too. And then running the heart rate every day, that's sort of making sure I don't overcook things. And my heart rate was real good on this run, average 401s for 14.3K with good heart rate data. I think it was like 138 or something. And did some strides at the end. So that was a good run. Got a bit of confidence from that. Next morning, went out and looks like I ran Moose Loop, did 17K. Yep. And then afternoon, golfie, back to the golfie. Got these pack of white geese out there. And I thought, they must see me so often that I might get familiar to them. So I thought, I'm going to run close to the geese and see if we've developed like a little bit of rapport. But nah, they're still scared of me. And then next morning, 8K, just down the Yarrawee Trail. And then in the afternoon, did a hill repeat workout. So went to the cemetery, 3x90-second hills, which is a fucking hard hill repeat. And if you read the comments on the Strava, you'll notice. I just read it and I'm like, oh, anyway, let's skip that. People didn't like swearing on the podcast. That was the theme of the comments in the Strava run comment area. But yeah, I did 3x90 seconds, 10x20 seconds, and then 3x90. And that's a hard workout. Those 3x90 seconds are rough, but then you get the 10x20s, felt though were really quite easy. So I thought I might have just been playing it a bit safe almost and not really committing to the workout. But then that first 90 second rep back, oh, I just didn't really appreciate all the lactic that had been accumulating. And I got to the top of that hill just destroyed. So those last two were really tough. And I still think hill repeats, hardest session that you can do, bar none, if you do them properly, if you go hard on them. So it was nice to just like turn the pace off, just run to a run to an effort up a hill. Next morning, just got 10K easy. And then in the afternoon, I ran 7K, no, 8K. Got some new shoes, got some new trail shoes. Well, they're kind of a trail shoe. They're like almost like a hybrid. They're a big, thick, maximal shoe. Got a lot of rain during the week, so all the trails are a bit messed up. Thought I better get some grip. And the next...
When you say you got new shoes, like, do you order them or do you just, like, just pick them off the wall and give them a go? Just spur of the moment.
This hasn't been released properly yet, this model, but I'm buying these. All the brands at the moment are being super tight about getting shoes out to people. Like... Normally, I could probably ask and get given a pair, but I know at the moment, like, it's not a good time to ask for things. So I just buy these myself off obviously, like, at cost price. But yeah, these ones haven't hit the shelves yet. A lot of the brands, like, are having real issues with delivery. The warehouses are struggling. Logistics companies been hit with a few cyber attacks the last few months, which is something you don't really care about until you don't get product from a certain brand for a month, and then you're in heaps of trouble. But that's a little irrelevant. These ones end up getting to me.
No, good conversation though. But like, so worldwide, are there just factories full of shoes sitting there at the moment?
Not really. It's a tricky space right now in Australia. You would have noticed probably that, like, our biggest running chain, the Athlete's Foot, they shut something like 150 stores or something for a period of time. And so they obviously are a big customer for a lot of the main brands. And that means that there's a lot of stock that isn't getting sent out to those stores. And the brands aren't making any money off that because they're not selling the stores that stock. So a lot of the brands actually stood down their employees, so they went back to a skeleton type staff. And I know they all operate differently, their warehouses. So Nike and New Balance use toll, where Nike don't actually have any employees anymore that actually work in their warehouse, so everything's operated by toll, a third party contractor. And lately at their warehouse, or well, Toll globally got hit by this big cyber attack, and so they can't communicate with, like, their systems just aren't working, so they can't send anything, they can't receive anything in, and it's actually a nightmare. Like, we've got customer orders sitting there, like special orders, we've got indents, new product that just hasn't hit the shelf yet that's supposed to arrive. You would have noticed, maybe not that this is the reason for that, but Nike Pegasus 37 has been released some countries, not in others. It's really hard work for the brands at the moment.
Mm. Yeah, thanks for giving us some details there. Pete behind the curtain, Brad.
Yeah, I feel like I was part of the Shoe Geek podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's limiting what, the worst bit is people are out running a lot at the moment. So we're actually quite busy and we're needing supply. And there's only a few brands that are supplying us or can supply us consistently right now. So it's, yeah.
Isn't it funny though, like when this all hit, I remember you saying on the show, like literally no one walked in your store on one day and you weren't sure how you're going to be able to sell like one pair of shoes. And now it's this running boom, but now the supply can't get to you. Like it's so complicated.
Yeah, it is a bit. It's been unpredictable. So yeah. People lost their job, but then they also got put back on with JobKeeper, and a lot of the business owners, not that it's still making up for their lost business, but they got access to small business grants and that kind of thing. So there's sort of there was positivity out there, and we were sort of questioning whether the unpredictable nature of it all, people would start to question their spending a lot more, or like what's necessary, what's not. So do I need to pay $200 for a pair of shoes right now, or should I save this in case shit hits the fan in a few months? But it sounds like people like really took their health and well-being important, like they placed that at the top priority, and they just like they went out, they started exercising more, and they realized that they need the kit to go with that. So whether it's a rain jacket at the moment, people can't exercise indoors that well, so they're buying rain jackets. Like, who would have thought that would be a thing a few months ago? All right, we're going to sell heaps of rain jackets. It's just no one knew what it's the everyone who's pretending to know what's going to happen, they actually don't know. It's like you guys might have quite a good theory on it, but you don't actually know. And we don't know. We're just sort of trying to make the best guesses we can at it. Order rain jackets, apparently.
Gloves?
Got that a bit. Oh, so many gloves. It's been bitterly cold down here this week. And Canberra too got cold, Brad.
Yeah, people can check my Strava now for weather updates.
I want to get to that when we get to you.
But anyway, on that topic, I ran on this trail and I don't think one person said hello to me. The whole trail, and I was sort of picking up who they were. I'm like, these are all new runners. I've never seen these guys before, and they don't like. You can sort of tell a new runner from an experienced runner. All these sort of new runners just giving me donuts as I run past, and this is at 8 a.m. in the morning. You'd think you'd maybe get some sort of reciprocation of a hello or good morning, but I felt like I was talking to icy blank stares. It was quite frustrating, actually. You been feeling that out there?
Nah, not in a Chukamauama. Everyone friendly up here.
Yeah, I've noticed it, Moose.
Yeah.
Just in general, though, like even when I was going down to the supermarket, it's just like everybody's scared of everybody these days.
Yeah.
They look at you like you got two heads. So I've noticed it as well.
Yeah. Anyway, run once that day. Then the next day I did a workout, so Vic Park, this was fucking garbage. There's something about Saturdays at the moment of garbage weather. But went down, did a 30-minute progression run. This was 5-minute blocks, cutting 5 seconds a K each 5-minute block. So I started at 3:30, cut all the way down. Last 5 minutes was at 3:03s, I think. And that was a good workout. Like, this was a good one from Ali. You get through the first 15 minutes really feeling like you haven't done much work, but then it just gets exponentially harder the next 15 minutes, where the last few minutes of the last block are really, they're pretty much all out. And But over 30 minutes, you're only working really hard for probably, oh, maybe 7 or 8, I reckon. It was good. It's a good one. I was happy with how it
sounds,
went.
Sounds exactly how I explained it in mid-April. So I did the exact same session, started at 3:30s and worked down to 3:02s. And so 3:16s average for that. But yeah, and I think I said it was like similar to how you feel during a marathon, you know, like you sort of tick it off really early and then all of a sudden you're like, ooh, this is starting to hurt a bit now.
Yeah, maybe you should send me the invoice then.
Yeah, maybe. I can send it. It's exact same session.
Yeah, when I did it last week, he called it Croker's Progression Run or something on my Strava. How come when I did it, Moose, I had to start at 3:15s last week and you start at 3:30s?
You didn't do this.
No, but you in my program, it said, what was it, 10 minutes at 3:15, 3 minutes at 3:10, 3 minutes at 3:05. You did the soft version.
I'm not as fit yet.
Partially going easy on you, I reckon. Got to up it. Yep. That session's too easy for a 2:14, man.
2:14 is coming back. Anyway, next, went out that night. Fuck, weather just got hit with a bloody rain squall, proper rain squall. And you know in Ballarat, when you get hit by a rain squall, you're copping sleet, hail in the face. It makes it hard, you know? Makes it hard. Feel for me, please. Feel for me. But then woke up the next morning, beautiful morning. Sun was out. It's about 0 degrees, so I had the gloves on. I've been really getting into arm warmers lately, you know, Stewie McSween style, but with T-shirt on, because you can peel it off and all of a sudden it's really comfortable. But had Bree on the bike, so she was allowed a bike. Basically, she's not getting any pain with that. So she was drinks bitch, gave me a few Morton gels along the way, ran out through the farming area, and then back on Remembrance Drive through the city to finish 4 minutes a K, average 138 heart rate. Your boy's getting fit. He's coming back.
Why are you popping gels on just like a easy long run?
Dietitian orders. I'm following the advice now. I got told you should be eating on your runs and you should be and then Ellie tells me what to do, Emily tells me what to eat. There you go, done.
Just settle down the excitement levels, Moose. It's only training, remember? No one cares about training.
It's how you feel when you train, though, Brad. It's how you feel. I'm not Instagramming this. I'm not telling everyone how good I am, except the whole podcast listener.
Except the 18,000 followers on this.
Yeah, you said you're getting fit. You're back.
I'm feeling good, though. I'm feeling motivated. Let's put it that way.
You going to have a virtual run or something soon, a bit of a hit out?
Well, Run Strong has something coming up, like a 5K that I might go and do something at. Might go do Jamie Cook, smack as hard as I can, call it a threshold.
I think the beast is getting on the track in Bendigo in a couple of weeks to drop a 10K if you want to come over to that. Restrictions are being lifted.
Shit. Let's get him to Ballarat. We'll do a 5K. can't wait to smack him up again.
Yeah, Archie's going down there. It's going to be everyone.
Oh, not Archie.
Everyone from Northern Vic.
Don't think I want Archie there. He's really rolling.
I'll talk about Archie in a minute. Brad, tell me about your week.
So I had a bit of a down week, although it didn't really feel that much. It didn't feel that easy, to be honest. So I kicked off with 11K on the Monday. So I went out early afternoon. Viv and Lily came out to Mulligan's and they went for a walk while I did my 11K. So I ran 46 minutes, 4:12s. I didn't feel too bad on that run off the back of the big Sunday. Then Tuesday, I just did an hour in the morning at 4:14s and 8.5K in the afternoon at 4:07s with a few strides. And I noticed that was probably actually Wednesday. I didn't do a session till that afternoon. And warming up, my back and my hip and everything was a bit locked, like how it had been, you know, the last year or so. So I warmed up and I'm like, this doesn't feel great. But then once I stopped and changed shoes and did some strides, it didn't really bother me and felt amazing during the session. So it was a 5-4-3-2-1 minute reps off 60 to 90 seconds float. So the reps went like 3:06 for the 5 minutes, 3:03s for the fours, 2:58 for the 3 minute, 2:54 for the 2 minute, and 2:45 for the 1 minute. And the floats, the quickest one was like 3:25 and the slowest like 3:46. So yeah, 309s for the 20 minutes. And yes, I was around Yerribee Pond, but I think my days at Yerribee are numbered. It's just so busy there now, and it takes a bit of the enjoyment away from training when you sort of, you got to concentrate on dodging people as well as focusing on your own session. So there's so many other places in Canberra to train where you can avoid people. So I don't think I'll be going back there for a while, to be honest. So, and then Thursday, I had like a midweek long run, but it was only 80 minutes compared to sort of my 90 to an hour 45 that I had been doing. So I got through 19.5K, 406s, didn't feel great. Back, hammy, and hip were all pretty locked and tight. Had some treatment that night, which made a big difference. And then got out for an hour on the Friday at 4:15s, listened to The Road to Nowhere. It was still a bit of a grind. I guess this week, it was 136K in total coming off the back of 182. And it almost, you know how sometimes when you do a bit of a taper, you just feel a bit flat. And also I find that my back and hip, so the more running I do, the better my back and hips are. Whereas when I reduce the volume, and because I'm not teaching, like I pretty much am just sitting around all day if I'm not running, which then causes my back and my thoracic and everything to tighten up, which then causes all of these issues. So that was Friday. And then Saturday, my session was 5K like solid, followed by like a 3-minute jog, and then 35 to 40 second hills. So I did that around the AIS loop, and this was tough. Like, I've realized over the last month, I've done a lot of stuff like shorter reps at sub 3-minute K pace and like longer tempos at that 3:15. But running like that low 3-minute pace for an extended period of time is like really, really tough. So I end up, what did I run around? 15:24 for the 5K. But the first 3K felt absolutely terrible. I don't know. I think for shorter reps and shorter sort of races, I think I need to work on my warm up a bit more. If I'm doing like longer tempos, I can sort of work into the session. Whereas these type of sessions, I reckon I'm almost better off having done a mini session before I start. So I went like 3:04 down the hill, 3:10 up the hill, 3:08 on the flat, and then. So that was the first 3K, and then 3:02 down the hill for the 4th K, and 3:01 up the hill at the end. And like the 4th and the 5th K didn't feel that much different to the 1st and the 2nd, but I'm just not, it's like my engine's not prime, ready to go. So like I probably would have been better off doing, I don't know, like a couple of solid K reps, like 20 minutes before I did these 5K, and I would have felt way better. But anyway, it was a good,
so
good,
is that solid all out, Brad?
No, not all out, but it was just like, I just felt really uncomfortable early on. And then I got to sort of 4K and I'm like, okay, I feel better now. So the positive for me was that my last K, which is up a decent hill, was 3:01. And it definitely wasn't all out because I jogged for 3 minutes and then did some hills. So
was this your sub 15 attempt though? Like you thought you might have snuck under?
No, definitely wasn't. Not when I'm going in, not when I'm running 3:04 down the hill. First K.
I thought that's why he was giving us nothing, Moose, because he had a bad 5K-er.
No. Like, it was an easy week. I wasn't sure how hard I was going to run this. Like, I thought to myself, it's an easy week. I'll just do it as, like, a 5K tempo, sort of 15:45 to 16 minutes. But then I thought, 16 minutes is probably a little bit, you know, like, it's like a pretty cruisy workout. But, no, like, I'll go back in, I don't know, maybe 4 to 6 weeks, do the similar session, and hopefully it's a little bit quicker for the same sort of effort. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Then that afternoon, got out for 32 minutes, 7.5K, 4:15s. And then my long run was just now 45. So I got through 26K at 4:03s. And, back and hips have started to settle down now, which is good. So, yeah, pretty light week for me. Nothing too exciting there.
So you ramp it up again this week, or does this go into a medium week?
So this will go up to probably mid 160s.
Mm. And ACT restrictions gone?
Some. I think you're allowed 10, like you're allowed to be with 10 people now. Like we can travel a little bit. We're actually heading down to the coast on Thursday for a few days.
So you're allowed to be tourists like that.
Yeah, we can travel. You can go and visit people now. Yeah. So
that's good.
Yeah, so be good to go and see like mum and dad. Haven't seen them for ages. So yeah. But I think it like there's still a lot of things that are closed. Like even a lot of restaurants potentially won't open until they're allowed to have more than 10 people in there because it's just not worth their while opening.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
to have 10 people. So
yeah.
I reckon it won't be until that sort of second stage that things will get back to normal. But I'm hoping now that there'll be some like sort of low-key track races in the hopefully next couple of months. Yeah, there shouldn't be any reason why they can't sort of organise to have, you know, if they can have 20, if you can train with 20 people, why can't they set up just races where there's 20 people on a track? So that hopefully that can start to happen in the next couple of months.
Has there been an announcement made on when the next announcement will be, you know? Announcement,
I think Daniel Andrews said today all these things at the moment will stay until the 31st of May. And then I think it's like we can go back, we can go forward or whatever, but this is like the next couple of weeks what we got handed to us this morning.
So
Brad, will this change your running in any way? Like, will you jump in more with Telford? Like, will he get his group of 10 back together again, jump in with all those fast guys?
I might see what they're doing each week and maybe pick out one session, but no, it won't change too much. I've written a bit of a program for the next couple of months, so so we'll see how that goes. But I'll just keep ticking along.
What about some real like blue collar time trials going on around Canberra? Get a few of those boys together, just roll out a 5K or stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I find it really hard to get motivated for time trials. I'm just like, well,
if you've got seven guys going to the AIS track for a 5K, that's better than the ACT 5K champs.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like I think to run well, right? The races, they need to mean something to you. If they don't mean anything to you, like you get to 3.5K and it starts to hurt. You're like, what's the point of this? Like,
well, I don't know. Like that's the I'm literally in a conversation with someone about this right now. I'm with you, Brad. I feel like those who have raced before will find it very hard to go out and do a time trial. But to a recreational runner who really, when they go in a race, they're not near the front anyway, and it's not very competitive in terms of, like, I need to beat everybody. It's like it's the time thing for them that matters. Mm-hmm. It's a personal competition. And yeah. It doesn't matter who's around them or if it's on a proper race. It's like, how much can I better myself?
Yeah, and like that's where I once was as a runner. Like I used to love that it was just me versus the clock. But like I'm not going to run a PB in a time trial, right? And so it doesn't have much appeal to me. Like if anything, it's like I'm just trying to get stronger and stronger so that like I want to get to the point where I can do more of these like 37 to 40K long runs at a decent clip and just be strong. So that when I do have the opportunity to run a marathon, that I'm ready to go.
Good.
All right.
I can't wait for it to happen.
Yeah, I don't know when, but
yeah. No one knows when. But
no.
Yeah, we'll see. Go through my week. I started the week on Monday morning. Did 10K, 10.7K at 4:28 pace. And then after school, just went down the river, got on this single track down in Echuca. Not sure what that bushland's called there, but you start at Aquatic Reserve for people playing at home. Did a 31-minute run, 4:34 pace Tuesday, talking about time trials. Met up with my trainer partner, Archie Reid, up here. So we got this thing, Cabernet Drive. That's where I did that 10K time trial the start of April. So we kind of go there at the start of every month just to do something, just to get that level of hurt. And, kind of pencil it in. And this time we were doing a 7K-er. So the plan is to try and get Archie in sub-30 shape by the time possibly races are back on. So at the start of April, he did 5K. I think his PB is like 14:42 or 14:48, something like that. So, yeah, the start of April, he did 5K in like 14:55 around there. And then we thought if we do a month's training, we can get that up to maybe 7K. So we went out there and my role was to pace it. So my motivation was pretty low. I know when I went out there the start of April, I was like super pumped up. And that's the first time I was trying out those alpha flies and really wanted to have a good hit out, because that was kind of the weekend I'd missed Rotterdam. So I was hoping I was going to feel the same way when I went out at the start of May, but definitely didn't. I was pretty unmotivated. It took me a while to get up. I paced Archie for the first 5K, took him through in like 14:54, and he was snapping at my heels and asked me how I was tracking. And if anyone's ever asking you how you're tracking when you're pacing, that kind of is a bit of a sign for me that they're happy to do some work. So I said, you take the next lap, and then we do this lap, which is like 950 metres. So he took the next lap from 5 to 6, and I thought about just sitting on him through to like 6.5K and just blowing the doors off like I've done with you boys a couple of times. But I thought I'd better go back to the front at 6K and just do some more work and kind of really set him up to try and get under this 21 minutes for the 7K. So I kind of went back to the front at 6K. I think we split that 500 in like 127, so kind of got us under that 3-minute pace pretty comfortably. And then with 400 to go, I just peeled out and just said, finish this off. And he put, 4 seconds into me, I think it was, 4 seconds in the last 400 metres. So he ran 20:50 and I ran 20:54. So you will notice on my Strava as well, Brad, that it's over 7K because we set the cone up beforehand and we run through to the measured cone rather than 7K on our watches. So, so that was good. It was hard being out the front for like a pretty long period of time. Like I just dragged me a bit and just felt like I was getting the same speed for just way more effort the longer it kind of went. And I can relate to what you mean about sitting at low 3-minute Ks or just a tick under for a long period of time. It really just starts to burn you and it just gets so much harder to maintain. But that was good. He's full of running, so we might try 9K at the start of June. We'll see how we go. Cooled down there Wednesday. I actually did an easy run on Tuesday afternoon, just 7K at 4:34s. Wednesday AM, I did my kind of 10.5K loop at 4:28. Then in the afternoon after work, did 6.5K at 4:41 pace. So that was pretty slow, but kind of pretty relaxing. Thursday was another jogging day. I did 13K in the morning at 4:27s and 8K in the afternoon at 4:44s. And then Friday, Moose, this workout you had for us, it was 1K at 2:55, 1K at 3:15, times 4. Pretty hard workout on paper. I looked at that and was a bit frightened.
Well, how'd it go?
Yeah, nailed it. Spot on. But yeah. I sent it through to Archie the night before and he kind of said, what's the recovery? And I'm like, no, the 3:15 is the recovery. And then because we met at 6:30 and it was cold and it was just one of those ones pre-work. I kind of said, look, we just got to get this done. It might not happen, but we'll see how it goes. And the hardest thing with this is not going over that line in the 3:15s. Like if you've got to work to hold a 3:15K, there's no way you can start just churning out 2:55s and you're just never going to really recover in time. But we got it done. We were a tiny bit slow early on. I'll just open this up and read some splits. We were 2:57, 3:15, 2:58, 3:14, 2:56, 3:14, 2:52, 3:11. And it was good doing it with someone else as well because like I took the first set, he took the second one, and then once I did the third set, it was just hang on for the last set kind of thing. And, pretty easy mentally after doing those mile reps you had me doing last week. So, I don't know, when you do 1K reps and you're hitting them in around 3 minutes, you just kind of get that first minute done and then look at your watch and all of a sudden it's 2 minutes and then you just got to hang on for another minute. So found that mentally good and all up like an 8K session at 3:05 average. So good signs there. Easy jogging Saturday with 16K in the morning and 7K in the afternoon. And then we went out to the Barmer Forest again. Did 2 hours at 4:09 pace out there. My map on Strava doesn't look like it, but we kind of found this 50-minute loop. We did that twice and then we just played around on some sand hills and stuff for the last 20 minutes. at the end there. So 155k a week. Was tired though, working a lot's knocking me around a bit. So yeah, I was pretty happy to get 155k's in, but got there
do you enjoy doing those time trials every month? Because the one thing I do see a benefit, like if you're a 5-10k runner, then having a hard hit out every now and then, because like you can't sort of replicate that in training. So to hurt yourself every now and then, to just remember what it feels like and to almost reset the body of this is how it feels to hurt again, because you can get quite, you know, if you just train for a long period of time, you just get very, very comfortable with working at sort of, you know, 80% effort. So every now and then it is good, I think, to hurt yourself just to remember what it feels like. And I often find after a hard effort, it sort of brings you up and training then becomes a little bit easier. Do you find that?
Yeah, you've summed it up beautifully. Yeah, I think like it's just mentally, it's kind of that harder. And like there were stages in that where, because we're doing this pretty much K loop, I'm saying to myself, I'm feeling shocking here. We're at 4K, but just get one more K done, one more loop done, just get another loop done. And then like that mental practice that you get that then you use in races, whereas I rarely go to that place in sessions. Like it's more like everything's, you know, you're not really going to fifth gear. You're not really hurting. So, and I think doing it once a month smart, like what we're doing at the moment, like I don't think you should be banging out a 10K time trial in, you know, pretty hard every Saturday morning. Like I think once a month's okay, get that hurt. And also having like somebody else's goals attached to it as well, and like having that accountability that I told Archie I'd pace him for as much as I could to try and work on his goals. So yeah, I think, you know, I had a responsibility and I told him I'd be there, and that's really why he's been training the last month with me to try and you know, tick this goal off. So I think, yeah, having it piggybacked with somebody else's goals is a good idea. And also just remembering how to hurt ourselves. So, yeah. And then I'm thinking now, like we've started talking the Bendigo Bats about, well, if it is 10 people, like I'm not sure when AV is going to get rolling again. And I don't think it's going to be for a long time. But there's no reason why we can't make our own little series where, you know, Andy and Jamie Cook might come up to Echuca and we do a 10K together. And Andy kind of paces us through the first 8K at 3-minute K pace and then blows the doors off us, and we all, you know, we could have three or four of us running 29.50, 29.40, or then we go to Bendigo and we run, you know, a time trial at the bottom of One Tree Hill to the top, or we kind of pick, you know, four or five different loops that we want to have even handicap races on. So,
yeah, you boys, you've got to come to Ballarat, do a lap of the lake.
Yeah, how good would that be? Like, there's 10 of us at the lap of the lake just having a hit out. Like, stuff like that is going to be fun and it's going to be interesting. And then, like, even getting to a stage where it's like, well, 3 weeks ago when Andy and we did the 10K, he beat us by half a minute. So this time over 7K, we're going to get a 25-second head start and he's going to chase us down and we're going to run scared and just stuff like that. And then getting to Ballarat and you get to Geelong, like, I don't think the big organisations are going to be able to do it, because all of a sudden it's one in, all in, and you've got to provide events for, you know, 500 or 1,000 people. But there's no reason why we can't just have our little Bendigo Bats Athletic League and, you know, we bring 5 people over to Ballarat and smoke you boys up.
Yeah, there's not a lot of competition here at the moment, but it's more about, like, something outside the norm, I reckon. So you guys talk about 10Ks and 5Ks and, I don't know, like Andy running 29.50 is probably not that inspiring for him, but if he can go and do something that he's never had a crack at, like bottom to the top of Bunyong.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, yeah. Or if he's doing a role where it's like, hey, because he's coming back from an injury as well, so it could be something where it's like, hey, there's two guys here who want to break 30, I'll take him through, you know, 9K feeling pretty comfortably.
Yeah, that's right.
Get a good workout. Yeah, I think that
different
This is now where it's going to be really interesting about who's going to be innovative and talking to people and, yeah, planning stuff for themselves. And it's probably the people who need it, whereas some people are just happy to keep their head down and just keep grinding away until races are back on.
Like Crokey.
He's been grinding away for 2.5 years.
But I still get a fair bit of benefit from once a month. Like, that last weekend, running 37.5K at 4-minute Ks with, you know, a bit of a kick down at the end, like, to me, that, like, the last half an hour, it sort of brings back, you know, having to stay sort of focused towards over a long period of time. So there's still elements of, you know, training for a marathon and preparing yourself in that training. So
yeah. Do you think injury risk, though, that is a much riskier thing to do than going out for a 5 or a 7 or a 10 or a lap of the lake time trial?
I don't know. I'm the type of person, I tend to break after a hard effort. So if I'm training like just consistently without, you know, going to the wet, going completely balls out, I'm probably better off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's thank some Patreon supporters, eh?
All right, I'll start.
Go for it.
Tim Powell from London. He's run 16:38 at Finsbury Park 5K PB, 34:52 for 10K at Valencia 10K. Same day as, what is it, Ronix's world record that day. Even splits, ran the Melbourne half. That's a long way away from Valencia and London. In 2015, 125, used to live here, runs for Serpentine. You know who else runs for Serpentine?
No. I think
doesn't Tony Payne run for Serpentine?
Yeah, I think he does. Yep.
Got some great photos on him running some muddy cross country over there on his Strava. Railway engineer, and his wife's name is Rani. Okay.
Well, Moose, I have Tim's brother, Jack Powell. But Jack actually lives in Australia. He's in Tanham Sands in Queensland. He's run 15:22 for 5K, 31:43 for 10, and 70:09 for the half. He's friends with Nick Earle on Facebook and finished 18th at the Noosa Bolt. He's a school teacher by trade, wins every race up there, and is a small town hero, a bit like Brady. He's always in the newspaper for winning local fun runs and also plays the bagpipes. So thanks for your support, both Tim and Jack.
Nothing better than small town heroes, is there?
You love it.
I don't know why you'd live in a city. I was thinking about it the other day when I was running. Like, why wouldn't you just live in small towns?
Yes, you can get, yeah, you get a car if you live in a small town.
Quality of life, thanks to a Kia. I'm going to thank Adam FitzHenry from Regency Downs in Queensland. He's got a 5K PB, I think, of 22:16, 10K 49:59. Half marathon in 1:52 at the Logan Festival half marathon, and ran the Gold Coast Marathon. I think it was his first one last year in 4:12. He is a business improvement manager, and I think he lost a whole stack of weight going by a Strava photo. He's kind of got a before and after set as his profile picture. And then I did some research, and ABC actually did an article on him after dropping all this weight and becoming a runner and trainer for his first marathon. So pretty inspiring stuff there, Adam, and thank you to for your Patreon support. Hope you're enjoying all the bonus content that's going up over there.
Very cool.
Rightio, boys, running news? Talking about people retiring and dropping out of NCAAs. Now, Dathan Ritsenside, he retired, and I thought he was a pretty significant name because, I don't know, over in Australia, I always paid attention to his career. Did you guys often?
Yeah, I did. One thing I like about him was the fact that he went to the marathon, then came back and ran a PB for the 5K after having gone up to the marathon, which is which you don't see a lot of people doing, and his range is amazing.
Yeah, well, look at his PB, 7:39 for 3K, 5K in 12:56, 10K in 27:22, half marathon in 60:00, and 207 marathoner, 207:47. So he's in the top four or five for most of his performances over those distances, which is pretty cool. Moose, you a fanboy? Nah.
I thought it was interesting when he went to, did you remember when he went to the Brooks Hansen Project?
Yeah, and Desi Linden.
She sort of said she wasn't comfortable with that because of his history with the Oregon Project. Mm. That was interesting. Look, I didn't really particularly follow his career or anything. There was a couple of cool videos that came out on FlowTrack I watched, but that was about it. Yeah, I mean, I'm an Australian fan. I like Australian runners.
Australian.
Australia.
Hey, did I have some more news in there and someone delete it?
No. That was it.
I didn't delete it.
Oh, I swear I had a story about Ollie Hoare in there, how his because I think he was in his last year of in the NCAA stuff, and because this coronavirus has wiped out their season, he's turned professional.
All right. Okay.
Which is a big piece of news, actually, because he could quite seriously be on the Australian 1500 metre team for the Tokyo 2021 Olympics.
What's his PB?
He signed with Flynn. Pat Flynn, isn't it? The big manager over there?
Don't know.
Ray Flynn.
Yeah, Ray. You knew him, didn't you, Moose?
Yeah. But... what's his PB for 1500?
Settle down a bit and I'll get it open now. Give me 2 seconds.
Well, you've made a call that he's going to be on the Australian team. He's going to knock out Stewie, like Luke Matthews and Gregson.
Mm.
That's what you've just said.
What about Matthew Ramsden?
Oh, well, him too. you put it...
3:37:20.
Yeah. He's got to drop 6 seconds.
What? Five, maybe. To run the Australian record.
Well, Stewie's got it. Well, Stewie and Gregson.
Stewie won't run the 1500. So there's three spots there.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Yeah, he's got another 12 months of train now. Oliver Hoare, watch him. He heard it here first. Listen to a question, Brad.
So we're doing the first one? The first one's more of a statement than a question, isn't it?
Yeah, go to the second one then.
All right. This listener question comes in from Supreeth Manaya. Hey, guys. First off, thanks for answering my questions about time trials a few episodes back. I just wanted to ask whether you guys could talk about how you use heart rate in your training. The topic has come up a lot in the weekly show and in the Road to Nowhere recently, and I find myself just hand-waving at how to use heart rate and basically just use it to slow myself down on easy runs. Not sure how I can take advantage of my heart rate strap during tempos or interval sessions. Thanks for all the work you guys are putting in to produce the show, and take care.
Good question, actually, isn't it? A lot of people wouldn't know what to do with heart rate.
Yeah,
it's still a pretty it's an ambiguous topic, really. Like it, some people would go so far to say that you can't really do anything without being in a lab and knowing your exact heart rate. For different zones, or I guess like your threshold and those like the areas that you want to work on if you're running to heart rate. So for instance, if you find your like aerobic threshold, then you can do work there, and the idea is that you spend a bit of time there and it helps to push that threshold out a bit. And then so if you don't fully know that properly, then you're always just guessing. That'd be like some people's arguments. For me, like, it's pretty easy, I reckon, when you've been running for a long time to run at a pace and know, or to run at a feel and know when you're over threshold and under threshold. Things just get quite hard quite quickly when you're over the threshold. And then if you go back and you look and see what your heart rate was later on at that particular time, you start to get an idea about what your threshold heart rate is. You do enough of them in a row, you've got a pretty good data set to work out where you should be doing your threshold runs. But the reason that I do it, and it's been quite beneficial to me lately, is using it on easy runs to make sure that I don't cook myself in between hard workouts, and that I'm getting aerobic work in without adding stress that I don't really need. And that stress might be 10 beats a minute too high. It's quite easy to go out and run that in that sort of gray area where you're sort of adding stress that you don't really want at that particular time. And it's showing me the difference, like, between how my body behaves in the morning and at night and what happens when I go uphill and how quickly I recover afterwards. It's sort of like some people don't give a shit about that and some do.
You've been in the lab though, haven't you?
I've been in it once, but your threshold changes as you go in and out of fitness. So you kind of need to be in there quite often to always have a good value to work off.
Brad, yeah. Any experience there from your time at the AIS?
No, like, I sort of go through phases with heart rate. Like, for me, I probably get most benefit by wearing it in summer, just because heart rate's likely to go through the roof, just for easy runs. But I agree what you said, Moose, about, yes, it helps to go into a lab to work out where your threshold is, but, like, you know when you change from going aerobic to anaerobic, there's this like for me, it's in my breathing. It starts to get really labored and like you're just not in control of your form as much. So you can generally tell when it's happening. And yeah, if you do use your heart rate, or if you go back and then look at the data and go, okay, at what point did I feel like that, and see what heart rate it was at that point, you sort of know where it is. But yeah, for me, it's that my breathing just starts to become a little bit labored and like a real sort of gasping for breath a bit more. And I find that my form starts to fall away a little bit and you start sort of thrashing around a bit more. So, but I'm not completely convinced on heart rate. I think sometimes there's just so much data out there as it is, and you can sometimes overcomplicate things.
Yeah, I like using it sometimes on those easy runs just to make sure they're easy. And sometimes I put it on for workouts, but I'll just look at it afterwards. Like I don't let it tell me how I actually feel while I'm doing the workouts. And then, I guess we've kind of got our threshold pace as well. And that's something that you kind of brought up in the introduction, Moose, that people are calling runs on Strava thresholds without using heart rate data. And then the other rule for thresholds is that it must be must be something similar to a pace you can hold for an hour. So us three would look at that and go, right, that's similar to a half marathon pace, we should be able to hold, you know, 3:03 to 3:07 kind of thing. You guys agree with that, somewhere around there?
Well, probably not me at the moment.
I was thinking off your Ballarat 15k run.
So I'd be slower than that, like for perceived effort. Like if I was going out for a run and going, oh, I need to hold a pace for an hour now in training, for me it's probably more like 3:15s. Whereas I probably could race at 3:07s or 3:06s, but on the day,
perceived effort would be
3:15s. And like the only time I've worn heart rate recently was when I did my longer tempo, because the weather was so crap, I didn't. Almost, it was a way of giving myself an out, so that, like, I know roughly sort of if I start to go above 170 that I'm working way too hard. And if I didn't have the heart rate monitor on, and I don't know, there'd be that little voice in your head saying, forget about the weather, the watch is right. Whereas if I'm wearing the heart rate monitor and my heart rate hits 170 and the weather's shit, I go, all right, forget pace and just go, I'm going to basically not run any harder because my heart rate's now at 170. So that's one reason why I might wear it.
This is a good question from Courtney Carter as well that links in with what we're talking about, heart rate. What watch do each of you wear at the moment? He needs a new one as his Apple Watch is shit. Non-negotiable, it must store and play back podcasts and upload workouts onto it. I got the Garmin 230, Courtney, most basic one getting around. It doesn't do any of that stuff you want it to do. Actually, I think I can put workouts onto it, but definitely can't get podcasts or music on it.
Yeah, I have the Garmin 935, so it does a lot of things, but it doesn't play music.
Yeah, so I've got the Garmin 245 music, and you can put Spotify on there, and I can download my own podcasts like outside of the app, the Spotify app. Like basically have your own little iTunes library on your watch, and so that sends it to Bluetooth headphones, wireless headphones that I run with. So it's really convenient for me. Don't have to carry a phone or an MP3 player or anything. It's super convenient. I love it.
Good watch. You'd recommend it for Courtney?
Yeah, it's simple. I downgraded from like the big Phoenix. Because it was heavy, looks pretty cool.
Carly used to have one of them, and I took it for a run one day, and my wrist was nearly dragging on the road.
Yeah, well, you're pretty. It wouldn't look good on your wrist. It looks good on an adult's wrist. Well,
I took I took her white one with rose gold on it as well, because I couldn't find mine. It didn't look good at all.
Yeah, there was a bit of a trend to go big and heavy for a while with watches, but I downgraded, spent half the amount, got the 245 music, lost a bit of capability that I never use anyway, and can now listen to music through my watch. It's a lot lighter. The problem is the battery. It drains the battery real quick. So if you're listening to music or even download, say you download a podcast, say it's a 2-hour podcast, and it can suck like 10-15% of your whole battery life just downloading it.
it's no good. And then when you're sending it with Bluetooth, picking up my heart rate Bluetooth and the GPS and fucking everything, and you got your light on, if it's kind of half dark, it's like I need to charge. I charge it every night.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yep.
Hey, can you do that thing where you kind of make a map on Garmin Connect and then send it to your watch, and then your watch acts like a compass when you're running new loops through the bush? You can't do that.
Watto has that shit.
I think I can with a 930. Like 935 has a lot of those navigational things on it, but I never use it.
Not the proper one. You don't have the proper one. He's basically got Google Maps on his watch, where we're in the bush. And we come up to like a half intersection of a few four-wheel drive tracks, and he goes, yeah, let's go right here. And I'm like, are you sure? And he looks at his watch. He's like, yep, this goes right, and then it hooks up to this road. And then it's even got the road names on his watch. So it's pretty good. It's pretty good if you want to carry around a fucking computer on your arm.
Yeah.
And drop $1,500.
$1,500?
Oh, something like that.
All right. Moose on the loose, got one?
Not really.
I love Brad how he gets on here, and this is his thinking time now.
Yeah.
Like, there's a document here with no shit. Like, how many words? I'm just going to do a word count on here. Yeah. Tools word count. There's a document here with 641 words I've already prepared. He's got one tiny section, and he goes, hang on, I've got to do something here.
Yeah, along with every week, it's like, just hang on a second, I'll get my Strava up, knowing that we talk about your training every week. And then he's like, so I read the blue, is that right?
Yeah. How about I continue my rant from before about the new running society that don't want to be part of the old running society? So I love the new running society. They're like, this is our sport booming right now, right? But let's all be friends. Let's be social. So I was actually going to title my run tonight, Making Friends with the New Runners, because the amount of people I ran past and smiled at who looked the other way tonight was astounding. And they're all big footy players too, so they're not used to like other men smiling at them, I guess. They're used to knocking their heads off. Yeah, I was like, this is quite humorous, given that it happened about four or five times in a row, where I smiled and said, "G'day, hi, how you going?" And then they just sort of like looked at me with a little bit of a awkward, kind of half angry, half surprised look, and then looked away. I'm like, oh. And then I sort of giggle after I run past them, and then that's the next one. How many people can I get rejected by in one run?
Did you see Batuta Advocates article today?
No.
Local couple fined for failing to greet or acknowledge fellow bushwalkers passing on the track.
Ah, yeah, there you go. Is that
taking the piss out of you?
Out of me? Yeah. Oh, like they think people shouldn't say good morning.
Yeah, it's like stop whinging about people not saying hello. That's why I read that anyway, isn't it?
I haven't read it, so I don't know.
This is the article. It was serious breach of national park regulations, and they've been fined accordingly. Well, maybe it is serious. I don't know. I'd never know the Batuta Advocate.
Well, they've never written a serious article in their life, so it's probably not serious.
Yeah, I know that, but which side are they on?
I actually tagged Watto in something the other day on Batuta Advocate. It was like, man who bets on, like, goat races in the middle of the outback.
Oh, yeah, I saw this one. Drive 60k to save petrol.
Yeah. Drive 60k to save 5 cents a litre off petrol. That is him to a T. And one of his workmates saw me tag it, and she actually loved it. I didn't know who she was, so we're all on the same page with Watto there. He's the kind of bloke, right? He's the kind of bloke who spends his entire Saturday afternoon searching the internet for some sort of coupon to use at Domino's for dinner that night, where he gets like $3 off a pizza.
I saw you tagged him in that other article as well, Moose, about, you know, the guy that got called, was it Peter Hellier, got called like fat and lazy, so then, you know, went and ran 60K?
Yeah, that's 100% what happened last week. I think he got a little bit sort of sensitive about that, so decided to do some training this week.
I saw that in Strava, 60K. He's coming up on Friends of the Show, actually.
That's what's coming. No kidding.
Yep, he's coming out. It's a big May, actually. Sinead Diver, episode with her yesterday. Yeah, Sunday, went out. That was actually good. I listened to that driving back from Barmer. She was talking about homeschooling her kids and talking about that tan thing, actually. She was also there. She ran the fifth fastest time of all time, talking about how she was a bit disappointed with the lack of coverage, talking about her performance. It was, pretty insightful.
That doesn't sound like Sinead.
Hey, no, yeah, it was good. Listen, Soph was getting fired up as well, though, both. Sinead wasn't getting that fired up, but she was just giving details about how things unfolded. So that's on Patreon. Shoe Geeks, we've already spoken about. What else is coming up in your life, Julian?
Well, you said this podcast, Run Easy podcast. I'm going to be a guest on that show on Thursday, and then I've got work. Like, so tomorrow morning, I got to wake up and do an online meeting at 6 a.m. Can you believe that? That's insane.
Who are you meeting?
Some American changing a point of sale software. Bloody Americans, you know. It's the best that I could get. It was 2 a.m. or 6 a.m. Anyway, I'll probably take the day off after that. I think I deserve it.
Yeah, I reckon you might. Early morning for you. Brad, what do you got coming up?
Heading to the coast on Thursday. So we'll be down there till probably next Monday. So that'll be a good little break. Haven't had many enjoyable times at the coast, like, since before Christmas. So it'd be nice to be down there.
Yeah, because they got hit with the fires and now all this stuff. No tourists rolling into town.
Yep.
Righty-o, there's no interview this week, but we're going to hear from Scott now about the round three results and the quarterfinal matchups. So he should pop into this conversation anytime. See you, boys.
See you, guys.
See ya.
Doesn't matter if it don't come back. From the shadow of my skin, I
burn on your name. All right, welcome back to the Inside Running Podcast. Scott Nicholas for another week. We were just talking off air that this might be the second last week we hear from you, we think. We'll see how things pan out. So things are starting to get tight. Thanks for giving up some time again for the show.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. And I've had some friends hit me up with feedback, and just it sounds like it's you know, been pretty interesting for a lot of people. So really appreciate the feedback from the friends that have reached out, but just from you guys having me on as well. It's been really fun.
I feel like I'm getting a PhD in Australian distance running history here, I reckon. It's been pretty insightful.
Well, I'm just passing on the info that honestly I learned throughout the way as well. So, you know, credit to the unnamed members of the committee, but also, you know, Len and Trevor Vincent specifically for just giving context on everything. Those guys are the kings of this stuff, really. So,
you ever thought about that, Brad and Julian, your digital footprint, that people could possibly be listening to us talking rubbish about running every week for the next, like, 100 years?
No, I haven't, but no. This exercise has certainly made me realize that outside the, I don't know, top 10 to 15 runners that you know of in Australia that have done amazing things, there's so many underneath that I could walk down the street, walk past them, and wouldn't even know who they are. So that's one great thing about this, is just celebrating all the people that have done some great things in Australian distance running.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, there's a lot of people, you know, this is 64 single performances that we started with. I mean, it doesn't do justice to the history of distance running, middle distance running, marathon, cross country running in this country, especially given the size of Australia. I mean, you know, we're what, 25 million people in this country. It's really pretty small. And with the history that we have, it's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. So first up tonight, Scott, we've got our round three results. That's what we're going to hear first, yeah?
Yep, that's right. So we've got 8 matchups to talk about there with winners. First of those, Herb Elliott against Graham Crouch. So you know how much we've loved Graham Crouch with that performance. I mean, he's beaten Commonwealth Games gold medal winners. with that fifth place Commonwealth Games performance of 3:34.22, which was the seventh fastest at the time in Christchurch in 74. However, up against a gold medal and a world record in a 1500 meter final in Rome in 1960 is impossible to beat for Graham Crouch. So Herb Elliott with the win there, I don't think there'll be any surprise or argument with that one. But pretty awesome to see Graham Crouch, you know, progress to the third round with that performance of his as well. Next matchup. This was a really, really interesting matchup. So you have Derek Clayton's world record of 208.34 in Antwerp in 69, up against Edwin Flack's double gold medal performance from the first modern Olympics in 1896. There have only been three Australian gold medal Olympic distance runners, and we're knocking one of them out here with Derek Clayton winning this round. So there was definitely some debate here. But in the end, we went with Derek Clayton. I mean, the end of the day here, you're talking about a single performance that took over a minute off his own world record, and his time before that had taken 2 minutes and 23 seconds off the world record. So essentially, Derek Clayton took the world record from 2:12 from Morio Shigematsu from Japan all the way down to 2:08, you know, 34. And that record stood for 12 years until Deke broke it. So it's really the quality of that performance that was outweighing Flack there. So good matchup, though.
Very good matchup. And we kind of spoke about that depth last week with Edwin Flack as well and how hard it is to assess that performance.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, you still go back over history and you go three Australian Olympic gold medal performances. You've got Herb Elliott, Ralph DeBell, and Edwin Flack. So, you know.
Still next to the name.
That's right. That's right. So, all right. So, Clayton for the win there. Next matchup, we've got Ron Clark's world record of 13:16 in Stockholm in the 5K in 66 against Dixie Willis's world record in both the 800 meters and the 880 yards from Perth in 62. Again, an interesting one. You've got Ron Clark breaking the world record here by 7.8 seconds against Dixie Willis, who broke the 800 meter world record in this race by 3.1 seconds. So, I mean, taking the women's 800 world record from 204 to 201 is pretty damn impressive. We went with Ron Clark here, though. I'm going to explain a little bit more about that and the context of why, and I think it will make more sense when we get to the next round. But Ron Clark for the win there. Next one. Dave Stevens, world record 6 mile, 27:54 from Melbourne in 1956, up against Deke's gold medal Commonwealth Games performance of 209.18 in Brisbane in 82. Deke with the win there. I went back and looked at Ikonga, who he beat that day, and like his history was ridiculous as well. I mean, this is a guy that had a course record at New York. In the late 80s, he ran 10 championship marathons, like, you know, Commonwealth Games, Olympic Games, World Championships, all the way from 1982 to 1995. He won Tokyo, Beijing, Fukuoka, New York. He ran sub-210 nine times, and he won eight of his marathons. So for Deke to beat Ikonga in a championship final on home soil in less than ideal conditions and run 209, that's why Deke wins that one.
Mm. Coming pretty from behind as well. Like, it's hard enough to chase someone down when they don't have those credentials.
Yeah, and I mean, those guys went absolutely hammer and tongs over that final stretch, and it's like, it's pretty epic watching that. So it was good seeing Moose put that up on the Running Company Ballarat Facebook page a couple weeks ago. That was fun to reminisce. All right, so Deke for the win there. Next matchup, we've got Benita winning World Cross in Brussels in 2004, up against Jim Bailey, being the second Australian under 4 minutes, and running that in LA in 56. Probably no surprise here. We've got Benita for the win there. I mean, winning World Cross, she won by 12 seconds. That's a winner there. So, next matchup, you've got Dave Power winning two Empire Games gold medals in both the 6 mile and the marathon in Cardiff in 58, up against Mona's first place, 208.16, Berlin Marathon 1990. We're going with Mona there. So you've got Mona's broke the course record that day. He won by 16 seconds over Gidimis Shahanga, who was the previous winner at Berlin, first time ever through the Brandenburg Gate in the Berlin Marathon. And if you've won Berlin, you've got a big name in marathon running. You don't win Berlin unless you're you know, one of the greats. So Mona's for the win there. Next matchup, Ralph Dubell, his gold medal equal world record performance in the 868 up against Mottram's Commonwealth Games silver medal and going sub 13 minutes in Melbourne in 2006. Similar to Herb Elliott, if you win a gold medal and break a world record, you are going to be very, very, very tough to beat. So Ralph Dubell for the win there. And then the last matchup of the third round, Lisa Ondiecki against John Landy. So John Landy broke the world record. He broke Bannister's world record of 359.4 and ran 357.9 in Turku, Finland in 54. Up against Lisa Ondiecki's first place, essentially women's only world record of 223.51 in Osaka in 88. You got to go with Landy here. Landy, you know, that's a significant record in a significant era, and that record that Landy, you know, Bannister's record really only lasted, you know, several weeks, and up against a world record that Landy broke that lasted for 3 years, basically 3 years, until Derek Ibbotson broke that. So so Landy for the win there. So that's round three.
We're down to the final eight. One female left, Benita.
That's right. So how much do we rate a world cross-country win? That's what that's going to come down to.
Did Benita beat any world record holders in that race? Because there's a lot of people still in this competition who have got world records, and obviously world cross doesn't have world records, but there could be a loophole there.
Well, you've got... I mean, three of the significant names she beat in the top 10, you've got Sally Barsocio, Lorna Kiplagat, and Worknesh Kidane. Good question. I don't know off the top of my head if Lorna Kiplagat had a world record. If I had my computer open in front of me, I would be quick on the draw, but I don't.
I'll have a look.
She's certainly beat such significant names. In winning that, I mean, these are all championship medalists that she's beating to win World Cross, and that's a hard era to win in.
And I did see on Let's Run the other day, they had the video, I'm not sure what year it was, but it was maybe 2000 and, I don't know, low 2000s, but Kiplagat won the cross country that year. I think it was in Kenya or Tanzania or something like that.
2007 she won.
Yeah.
Kiplagat.
Yeah. So she's beaten a previous champion.
That's right.
Gold medalist over world half champs. Yeah. Don't know if she got a world record though, Brad. Do you?
No, I don't think so. No world record.
Alrighty, Scott. So now we're down to final eight. Do you want to give us, this is the quarterfinals now. Do you want to tell us who meets who in the quarterfinals and the winners to get us down to the final four?
Yeah,
actually,
good.
I think we're telling you that, aren't we?
Yeah, how about we say the matchups and then Scott can give us the results for them.
Yeah.
Cool. Sounds good.
I like your plan, Brad.
And we'll go one by one. So cool.
All right, I'll kick it off. So the first quarterfinal sees Herb Elliott up against Derek Clayton.
Yeah. Again, tough matchup here for anyone not named Herb Elliott. So we're going to go Herb Elliott for the win here. And I'm going to be pretty honest, that's a pretty straightforward one. As much as we love Derek Clayton's performance and, you know, essentially, you know, putting the world record into outer space for the marathon until Deke ran 208.18 in Fukuoka in 81, you win a gold medal and you set a world record in the Olympic final, and that is the pinnacle. So Herb Elliott for the win with that one.
So hypothetically, if Clayton did that at an Olympics, would have been very hard to split.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I'll go to the next one. Ron Clark against Deke.
Yeah, so again, good matchup here. Talk a little bit more. I'm gonna give the result first. So first of all, as much as we love Deke and winning a championship performance in a fast time in tough conditions, we're going Ron Clark for the win here. A bit more context about that world record that I think for those that don't fully understand how significant that world record was that Ron Clark set. You go back basically 10 years prior, and from 1954 to 1957, the world record for the 5K shifted from Zatopek's 1357 all the way down to 1335 over the course of 3 years, so from 54 to 57. That 1335 ended up being set by Vladimir Kutz. The world record got broken 9 times within that 3-year period. So pretty evolutionary period for the 5K. And that period basically locked everything down for 10 seconds. And then all of a sudden, you get Ron Clark coming along in January of 65, and he runs 1334 in Hobart just to take a couple of tenths off the world record. The next month, he runs 1333 in Auckland. So that's February 65. In June of 65, he goes and runs 1325 in Compton, California. So he takes 8 seconds out of the world record. Then Kip Kano, later in the year in 65, back in Auckland, takes a couple of tenths out of the world record. So he takes down to 1324. Then all of a sudden, you fast forward basically 8 months later, and Ron Clark takes another 8 seconds out of the world record and runs 1316. So basically, Ron Clark single-handedly took 19 seconds out of the 5K world record in an era that was already well established. Mm. So, you know, you kind of look at, what are we weighing here? Are we weighing the total body of work, or are we weighing the single performance? It's kind of the single performance after the full body of work. That's what really got rated here. So that's why we went with Ron Clark beating Deke there in a championship final. We really rate championships throughout this entire contest, but the significance of that performance is just too great to let it go.
And all the, like, there's that many books on it. Like, it just must have been, when you're around that time, just so significant just how much the running literature is still around these days.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you watch certain world records over the course of time. The people that watched them, whether it was on TV or in person, they simply thought they weren't human. I remember seeing Michael Johnson run 1932 for 200, watching that on TV and just going, I'm a distance runner, and I've just never seen anything like that. It was just like, you feel like you're watching another, like, species run that. You know, it was the same, you know, when I never saw it until later on, but it was like when you saw Komen run 720 for 3K, it was just like, you kind of just go, look, I think I know what I can comprehend. And you see something that's beyond your comprehension and you just go, Jesus, like, you know, and you know that Ron Clark was clean. This is the thing, you know, you're not sitting here talking about an EPO athlete, you know? Nope. So all time.
Not so good for the marathoners so far though. Dropping like flies. Moose, who's the next quarterfinalist?
The next quarterfinalist, Benita Willis with her gold medal in the World Cross Champs 2004 up against Mona, obviously Berlin Marathon. Yeah.
And I'll jump in there. I can confirm that Lorna Kiplagat did hold the world half marathon record. She broke that in 2007, where she ran 66.25.
Come on, Benita.
Yeah. So, look, this is, you know we love Mona's. And, like, I love Mona's performance so much. Like, when I had my running company, Geelong Store, that was, like, the first image that I wanted to put up in the store. And I wanted to do that because I remember, like, I was in high school in 1990, and I remember seeing the photos in, I think it was either Track and Field News or Runner's World, of Mona's winning that marathon. And just that shot of the distress on his face close to the finish line and the ripped jersey. And it's just always been an epic performance from an epic athlete in my mind. But we're going with Benita here. You win World Cross, and it's just too significant. You know, we're talking close to, you know, Olympic gold medal performance here when you win World Cross. So Benita for the win there. Mm-hmm. Again, the people of who she beat in that field, the era that she did it in, you know, Lorna Kiplagat, world record holder later on in the half marathon. So, yep, Benita for the win.
And last one, Ralph DeBell up against John Landy.
Yep, so we've got Ralph DeBell here as well. So both guys breaking world records, or one tying the world record but having a gold medal with it, that is single-handedly the reason for that one. Yeah. So adding a gold medal plus equaling a world record.
Very good. Four left.
That's it. Four left. We're getting tight now. So your four semi-finalists, you've got Herb Elliott, Ron Clark, Benita, and Ralph DeBell. So pretty epic athletes still standing.
Final four. Thanks again, Scott. We'll be hearing from you next week. And then we should have got some betting or something on this. Could have run a, could have run a book.
Probably a little late now, but hey.
Odds for the final four would have been interesting, though.
Yeah, exactly. And look, I mean, you know, there was some serious debate over these coming matchups. So, I think people will find it interesting. And when you see some of the context behind these performances, I think things start to make more sense in my book anyway. So,
Very good. All right, fellas, we're done for another week. Thanks again, Scott. See you later, Julian and Bradley.
Cool. Thanks
again, guys.
See you, fellas. See you next week. Bye.